Hi, and welcome to the Microsoft Virtual Academy session on software development fundamentals. My name is Jerry O'Brien, a technical content development manager here at Microsoft, and I'm joined by Paul.
Hi, I'm Paul Pardy. I'm a content development lead at Microsoft.
And we're going to kick this session off focusing on Module 4 of the Software Development Series Fundamentals series. And this one will focus on web applications. So it's important from the perspective of considering your career in software development to know the different types of applications that you might be involved in creating. And that's what these next few modules will cover. So we'll talk about web applications specifically in this module, and we'll cover other types in the modules that follow. But what we're going to take a look at here from this perspective on web applications basically is a quick overview of web page construction and talk a little bit about the difference between HTML versus an actual ASP.NET or a web application itself. And then we'll gain an understanding, kind of a high level of ASP.NET, which is Microsoft's platform for web applications, which will kind of help you understand a little bit of the differences between just a core HTML page and an actual web application that does has some functionality. We'll talk briefly about how those sites are hosted on the different platforms. In this case, we'll focus on Microsoft's platform or Internet Information Services. And we just want to gain an understanding of how the hosting of this information takes place on a web server itself. And then finally, we'll take a quick look at what a web service is, so an introduction to what they are and how they provide functionality within the programming world. So simple web pages, when we consider the web itself, where the World Wide Web initially came from, I almost said initiated, where it initially came from, was through the use of static documents. And the static documents were created in a language known as HTML or hypertext markup language. And although the pages were static, they actually consisted of hypertext markup language, and those contained hyperlinks, which allowed you to click on a link and navigate to another place on the internet to gain access to whatever information was maybe stored at that particular location and time. And again, it's important to just kind of look at it from the perspective of HTML being static documents versus web applications, and we'll show the difference between the two, although web applications are actually consist of, from the user interface perspective, HTML as well. So with web page construction, there's, especially with the introduction of HTML5, which is the latest standard from the World Wide Web Consortium, which is the group of folks who maintain the standards for HTML and for web technologies. HTML5 now includes three technologies that complement each other. And there's HTML, or the hypertext markup language. There's CSS, known as cascading style sheets. And then there's JavaScript, which adds functionality to our applications. So from the perspective of what each does specifically, HTML itself is intended to be more semantic. It's designed to talk about what the structure of your web page looks like, what that document should actually look like, and it includes tags that provide that structure. The CSS is cascading style sheets, is what's responsible for applying the look, if you will, of the HTML page itself. So it's responsible for saying how the elements on the page will look specifically. And it's known as cascading style sheets because we can talk about inheritance and object-oriented programming concepts, but cascading style sheets also talks about an inherited method or parent-child relationship between the styles that are applied. So if we have styles applied at the page level for the HTML page, those styles are applied at that parent level. And then elements within the HTML, such as, you know, the paragraph elements that we have or individual div elements that we might create, each one of those become a child of that parent page, that HTML. And we can apply styles at the individual attribute level or the individual HTML element level as well. And this creates that cascading effect. So we might apply a text color of blue to all body text of the page, but then get into a paragraph element and change that color to red, in which case that overrides the previous one. So the styles kind of, and this is where that cascading comes into, they fall through what's known as a document object model. So the HTML The JavaScript and the CSS are all interpreted by the web browsers to display what you see on the page when you view it in Internet Explorer, Firefox, whatever your favorite browser may be. So let's go ahead and take a quick peek at an HTML demo so you can get an idea of what we're referring to.
Jerry, before we get into the demo specifically, can you talk a little bit about state versus stateless, particularly given the concepts that we covered in previous modules? I'm interested in here in just having the beginning user understand the difference between a stateless machine and one that will maintain state between sessions.
Yeah, so that's a good question, Paul. And so what Paul is referring to in terms of state and stateless, state refers to the ability of tracking, if you will, specific information about what you're doing. So when you open up an application locally on your computer, you can have that application store information about what you're doing, so it becomes locally stored on that computer. And then when you open that application back up, it can come right back to where you were. So as an example, if you have a Windows Phone application or if you have an iPhone application that you were, in the process of taking a picture of something and you took the picture and you had saved it, and then a phone call came in right in the middle of doing something with the picture, which meant that whatever that application was that you were doing ends up in the background. When you come back to that application, the state information tells the app how to get back to where it was that you were and what you were doing specifically. So it might open up the last picture that you took, or it might take you in terms of if you were browsing the web, it should take you back to the page that you were actually browsing. And the other thing that Paul is referring to is when we get into web applications, typically they used to be stateless, which meant that they didn't really track where you were and what you were doing. And a good example of that is if you open up your internet browser and you browsed off to the Microsoft Store site because you wanted to buy the latest Surface tablet that's available, and you close down Internet Explorer, the next time you opened it up, it's not going to go back to that Microsoft Store website with the items in your shopping cart because it's stateless. You have to have a way of determining where you were, what you were doing, and so you have to have a way of storing state information. Now, over the years, we've changed to storing it in things called cookies on the computer. Some people hate them. They're little, text files that get stored on the computer that contain that specific state information. So if you've ever visited a website and you had the ability to customize the view of it, or if you visited an e-commerce site and you're adding items to your shopping cart and your browser session ends for some reason and you come back in and you go, hey, I signed back in and there's my shopping cart stuff. So they knew exactly what I had. That's an example of the web application is now implementing stateful information into it. So is that going to answer your question, Paul?
Yeah, and I think there's just an important concept to keep in mind as you go from desktop programming to web programming, because the way that you maintain state between sessions and the way you maintain your data is going to be very critical, and understanding that concept early I think will be helpful.
Yeah, great. So, so kind of a great question, to make sure you've got it clear in your mind. They are a couple of different, they're different programming models, and you will have to be aware of that as you start coding in web applications, how you maintain that user state and how you have the ability to get them back to where they were. So on our screen, if we switch over to our Visual Studio, we can see an example of just about as simple as you can get for an HTML page, not as simple as they come because I have added a couple of extra components in here, but we know it's an HTML page because of this HTML5 declaration at the top that says doctype HTML. We have tags in here, so HTML, head, title, body. These are known as HTML elements or HTML tags, and they, again, lay out the semantic structure of the page. We have a head element which talks about this is the header portion of our HTML page. And within the header portion, we can expect certain things to be present in there, such as the title tag. The title tag is something that tells us when we open this page in the web browser, this is what will be displayed in the tab. So if we have a tab browser experience, right, or in the title bar of a non-tab browser. We also have an H1 tag. This is an example of kind of, almost in a sense, if you will, breaking a little bit of the rules for separating semantic and presentation, where H1 specifically tells the browser that I want this text to be displayed a certain way. And your browsers will interpret it differently, and you have the ability to completely customize that in your browser to say how big you want this H1 to look, if you want it bold text or not, or what have you. But the P element is an example of, again, coming back to structure. It's a paragraph. We're telling the HTML browser, when you display this, this is a paragraph that should be physically separated somehow on the page from anything else. So if we take a quick peek at this, let's just right-click and go, hey, view in browser, and pop up Internet Explorer. And so we can see, here's our generic page, here's our header, H1, and Internet Explorer says H1 should be a certain size, and it should be in bold text, and a paragraph tag should just follow the standard normal text, whatever the user has configured in their browser. And you'll notice that there is a space separating the two values here. So that's kind of what the P does, was it gave it that physical separation.
And the reason you don't see the tags here is based on what something Jerry said in the previous slide. The browser interprets those tags and then displays what's between them on the web page. So all the tagging is behind the scenes and is interpreted by the browser. And many browsers will interpret tags differently. That's why what you see in Firefox may not look the same in Internet Explorer and vice versa.
Yeah, and that's a good point, too, because you will find that different browsers will render different HTML elements not precisely the same. And as Paul mentioned, you know, you don't see the HTML tags in here, but if you were to right-click on your browser, in this case, Internet Explorer offers it this way, Firefox may have a different menu in Chrome, etc. But if you select View Source, you can see that what was sent to the web browser is pretty much exactly what it was that I had, you know, typed into my Visual mm-hmm. Studio window. So behind the scenes, the browser reads this text, but it displays this, all right? So as Paul mentioned, it's hiding all of that structure behind the scenes. It's you know, the user doesn't need to see these tags because they really don't care, and it adds clutter and makes it difficult to see. So again, that's just kind of the very basic HTML page that we you know, we can show you and to give you an idea of how it kind of remains a little on the static side. When we start talking about getting into ASP.NET web applications, we can start delving a little bit deeper into what we can do with our web applications. And these, the concept of application should really denote to you functionality. So an application has functions. It has the ability for you to interact with it and do different things, whereas the static HTML page really is text and hyperlinks and maybe images, and you click on things and it takes you someplace else. You might consider that a certain amount of interactivity, but certainly not as close as what a web application provides. So let's have a look at the differences where we take a look at what an ASP.NET application really consists of. ASP.NET is really kind of a server-side framework. And we can have functionality in our web application that is server-side or client-side. And that simply talks about where the code gets executed. And server-side means that we have code written and it sits on the server that is serving up the web pages and it processes all of that information. Client-side means that we have code that exists in the HTML page itself and it will be executed on the client side, so we don't have to go back to the server to do this whole execution process. So ASP.NET provides that web application functionality through dynamic content. It allows the user to interact with what they're looking at. It allows them to do certain things that they want to do within the application, such as filling out forms and, you know, clicking on a submit button and having some functionality take place from that perspective. And we'll see it a little bit in the demo as well. A web application, including ASP.NET technologies, use a couple of different aspects. So we still use HTML. We still have that displayed in the browser, which provides that functionality, or not functionality, but the user interface aspect that our viewers actually see. But it also deals with something called code behind, and this is where that functionality exists, is that we have the ability to add the interactivity, the processing components, and those all sit in what ASP.NET refers to as a code behind file. So it could be C# or Visual Basic code that runs in the background that, again, as we mentioned earlier with the HTML tags, you don't see those being rendered in the browser itself. In order for ASP.NET to provide this type of functionality, It has to be hosted on an application server. And ASP.NET is hosted on Internet Information Services that Microsoft makes available as the platform for hosting websites itself. And ASP.NET also builds into it what's referred to as data connectivity, which means that we have functionality within ASP.NET in the programming environment to connect to data sources such as databases, flat files, or what have you, to actually render the content or do the processing that we need specifically for our application. So let's do a quick demo of an ASP.NET application. We'll pop out to Visual Studio again. And again, you know, the index.html was this raw HTML page that we went through the process of creating. But when we start looking at ASP.NET, we'll find that our files take on names like default.aspx, and that .aspx is an extension that says this is an ASP.NET web page or functionality. Take note that the content here is a little more involved than what we saw on our basic web page, on the basic HTML content. We actually have tags in here such as ASP content itself, but we also have it interspersed with HTML tags, so you recognize the P element from earlier on. If we take a look at this page here, in order to actually see it rendered in the browser, we would want to execute the web application by running it from within Visual Studio. So by clicking on the Run button, we're still firing up the web browser to display this. But the thing that was interesting to note is here now, instead of just looking at a file, we actually have something called localhost. And Visual Studio includes this little component. You'll see this little new icon down here that says IIS Express. This is a smaller version of Internet Information Services that allows us to serve up web pages on our development machines. In a production environment, you would have typically a Windows Server operating system running on the back end, and you would have a full version of Internet Information Server executing on that, and you would deploy your web application to that. But as we take a look at this page that's displayed, there's definitely some HTML in here. There's definitely a lot of HTML in here. Again, if we right-click and go View Source, you can see that there's a way more HTML, way more content in here than what was in our basic page. And this is where we're getting that functionality from a web application perspective. It's also important to note that we've got some nice background colors in some of our headers, like in this ASP.NET header. We've got a button here that has, has a nice little blue color to it. And so some of that functionality is all implemented through the use of style sheets. And again, if we take a quick source view, we'll take a look and see that we have these things called CSS files and style sheets that are in our code up here at the top. Those style sheets are what are responsible for providing that display or that color, if you will, to our application itself. Do a quick pop out into Visual Studio here again for just 1 second, and let's stop running that application for a moment. We'll go back and look at our index.html. And to give you an idea in something that's a little bit cleaner and not as cluttered as all of that other code was, I'm going to uncomment this line of code, which is similar to what you just looked at. So we have content style sheets, and what this does is links a style sheet into my HTML page. And you remember when we looked at this in the first time, all we basically saw was these two text values on a white background. Well, this stylesheet1.css actually exists in my project. So when we take a look at everything that we have available, we've got a bunch of different folders that contain all kinds of bits and pieces of information that support this web application itself. But under this content folder is where we see all of these style sheets. And it's just a way of separating everything so it's easier for us to find. So this stylesheet1.css is about as simple as you can get for CSS. And all it does is say, look, anytime you apply this to an HTML page, if there is a body tag, then I want you to set its background color to blue. You want to see what that looks like, let's right-click and view this in the browser. And we see a white background. Why do we see a white background?
Maybe we need to save it.
I love it when demos work, and I think you're right, Paul. We should save that, and the style sheet is present. It is in content. We right-click and view that in browser again.
Try refresh.
It could be. There we go. It was cached. Mm-hmm. All right. So we cached the. We had the previous page cached. Paul is right on cue for that. I completely forgot about caching. So it kept an old version in the browser cache. So by refreshing, we get rid of the cached version, bring in the newest one. And as ugly as it looks, you can see that our CSS did work. We do have a blue background on our page, right? And it was applied to this body tag. It's essentially what it was. Now, we also talked about some of the functionality that a web application consists of and how ASP.NET supports that. Supports the HTML5 standards through the use of JavaScript, right? So let's go ahead and execute that ASP.NET page again so that when we look at it, oh, sorry, we were in looking at the wrong one. I want default.aspx to be the page that pops up here. So default ASPX comes up again after much churning. There we go. And this is still pretty much just generic static HTML content, although it's laid out. CSS does a very nice job of presenting this in a visually compelling way. But these buttons, if you take a look, and I think we can just barely see, but if I hover over this button, down in the lower left-hand corner of the screen, you'll see it's just a hyperlink. So the button's only going to take us to another page. It doesn't really demonstrate web app functionality. But if I want to log into this website, here's where we start looking at functionality that exists within the application itself. So HTML provides the presentation here, which gives us our text we see on the screen in these text boxes for inputting the values that are in here. And when we click on the login button, it's going to require some processing on the back end of the server. So this is where the server side functionality comes into play. I don't have a user account, so I want to register for a new user account. And again, this is an example of functionality. Even though clicking on that register took me to another HTML page, this one here will have functionality written in the background that allows me to specify a username and a password. And I'm just on purpose, I'm going to leave this password blank for a second to show you something. But if I had filled it in and I clicked on register, this would send a request out to the server and it would say, here's a username and a password, and I want you to do some processing with that. So create a new account with GeoBrian as the username, and whatever value is passed in, here's the password, hash it so that it's secure, nobody sees it, and store that in the system so that the user now has an account. That's an example of functionality that's taking place on the back end, on the server side, right? It doesn't happen on the user computer. And so that information will get stored on the server in a database somewhere. It doesn't get stored as a cookie on my computer. This is an example of server-side processing. But an example of client-side processing using something called JavaScript is what we'll demonstrate now. So when I click on the register button, first thing it says, would I like to store my password for localhost? This is just a standard Internet Explorer dialog that pops up for security purposes. It's important to note that if I did say yes, my password would be stored locally using cookie information. Okay, but it's not related to server-side processing. So let's just say no for this site. What I wanted you to see was because I did not fill in the second password option, I now have some red text that popped up on the screen. One that says the confirm password field is required. And I see it in two different places here. And this is an example of some JavaScript code that was actually executed. If we right-click and go view source again, we won't necessarily step through each and every aspect of the JavaScript functionality, but see this tag that's called script and the components that sit within it, okay? This is an example of JavaScript. This is client-side functionality that actually goes through the process of executing on the client side. JavaScript is a client-side scripting language, so it functions on that. And this is what's known as an inline script because the code for the function here is actually written in the HTML. But there's also the ability to bring in external JavaScript files, and that's where you'll see this example. So script source equals, and then there's this big long string which actually points to a file called msajax.js, which is a Microsoft implementation of JavaScript located in the bundles folder of our project itself. So again, it's just an example of a bunch of JavaScript components that execute, and that function that when we submit it, the form on submit, it executes some validation functions. And the reason we want to do that on the client side is because we don't want to have to go all the way back to the server, creating network traffic, the potential for slowing down the user experience on this. But stuff that we can validate on the client side, we do so with JavaScript. And that's what provided that functionality for us.
And by client side, you just mean the local user's browser, Internet Explorer. And server side is actually the web server that's serving up all the content, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So client side means your browser on your computer. Server side means the server that's actually hosting it.
And in the environment you're in here, your computer serving is both client and server because it's a development environment. But normally, those would be separated. I think you mentioned that before, but I just want to be clear about that.
Exactly, yeah. So when we talked about down here, this little icon that showed up right here, which was called the IIS Express, that's an example of my computer, the demo computer here, is serving as both client and server.
That's right.
Yeah. But it's not the typical environment that you'll run into. So. All right, so that's a kind of a quick and dirty look at ASP.NET and web applications. And so hosting the websites is something that we focus on from the perspective of, you know, which server is going to host the website, and the one that's going to be responsible for serving it up. So hosting the websites, you know, are typically done, as we mentioned with the example that we just showed for ASP.NET, we have an actual local development version express, kind of a lightweight internet information server hosting the system that's set up here. Typically, you'll have server operating systems in the back end that will be hosting these websites and these web applications. We talked about IIS, which is Microsoft's implementation of it, but if you're running on a Linux machine, maybe you're going to run Apache. So there's a bunch of different types of website hosting or server hosting applications that exist out there. And all they do is they sit on the server as a service. There's usually not a user interface for it. There may be configuration tools, but they sit there and they host the application code and they host the interface. Think about when you visit a website, you simply type in the URL. So you could go to HTTP, www.microsoft.com, and that goes through all that whole internet process communication of DNS servers and, you know, routers and trying to get to where it is, and it finally gets to Microsoft's web server. Now, there's a software application, IIS, sitting on that web server, listening on a specific port. So it's listening for communications to come in, and it gets the request for serving up that default page from Microsoft.com, and it says, hey, I need to establish now a communication with this client computer, and it establishes the communication by accepting the connection and then sending back the HTML that the user simply requested. And so, you know, we get this two-way communication. I want to see something. Here's what you wanted to see. Thank you very much. The important thing to remember, and this goes back to Paul's conversation about state and stateless, is that once the web server has sent you back the HTML, it completely forgets about you. It's done. It doesn't care about you anymore. You've got the data. I'm going to sit and listen and wait for somebody else to come in and request. You may also not realize that when you connect to a website that hosts HTML text and images, for every image that exists on that web page, you're making another connection to the web server. So if you had 20 images on a say the default web page for a particular website, you'll make an initial connection for the HTML page, and then you'll hit 20 more connections to that same web server just to download each and every one of those individual images. So they become different communication mechanisms. But it's that web server software, IIS or Apache or whatever you might be using, that is responsible for serving up the data and the requests that come in. All right? So the last thing we want to talk about in this particular module is a quick focus on web services. And web services are a little bit different than a web application, but a little bit the same. And where they differ from is that a web service typically doesn't have a user interface. So similarities are that a web service is hosted on a web server. And it could be IIS, it could be Apache, it could be whatever. But what it does is it provides programmatic access to certain functionality. Whereas if you connect to a web server to work with a web application or view a web page, you're given a GUI environment, some kind of a graphical environment aspect that you're viewing that gets returned to you. When you're interacting with a web service, you're typically doing it as a software developer. Now, that's kind of odd to say that because it doesn't mean to say that users can't interact with web services, because you will interact, but you will do it through the context of an application or a program. And to give you an example of what that means is, if you think about the NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is an organization that deals with all kinds of weather stuff. They have weather charts, radar, different bits and pieces of information that focus on forecasting and making weather available to folks who need it. They create a web service that hosts certain functionality that programs can make use of to return weather information to them. So I might write a Windows Phone application that displays weather on my phone. And so I don't have to deal with going outside each and every day and looking at what the weather is and coming back in and writing code and redeploying my application so that you can use it to see what today's weather is, which wouldn't make any sense at all. I code my application to pull their web services. And their web services will accept information from me, such as tell me where you are, you know, so give me a zip code, and I will look up the weather for that zip code, and then I will return the weather back to you. And maybe my application only makes use of small pieces of it. I might only care about what's the forecast, what's the temperature, and that's it, and I'll display that in my application. I might want to get even more detailed and gain access to more functionality from their web services by saying, but I want to see radar images, and I want to see, you know, what the ceilings and clouds look like, or I want to see more detailed information on weather. I can do that simply by calling the necessary functionality, and that's known as an API or an application programming interface. But in web server or web services terminology, is you're accessing the functionality, you're accessing specific services to gain access to the information that you're looking for.
And just to build on some of the concepts that we were talking about in a previous module, a web service could just be a collection of classes with publicly available interfaces, which is a concept we talked about last time, that you can call from any program. So you can call it from a website, you can call it from a Windows Phone app or a Windows app, and those classes will provide you with the functionality. So there'll be properties that we talked about, there'll be methods that you can call, and that's how you create your web service. So if you just think of it as a set of classes that are publicly available on the internet, that might help to categorize it with some of the concepts we talked about in the last module.
Yeah, and that's a good clarification on that too, Paul, because again, it's the way I keep the two of them separated is a web application is something that is visual, and a web service is not. It's programmatic. And you know, so I keep them separate that way. But again, as Paul mentioned, the web services are typically collections of classes, and those classes have behaviors and functionality, and we simply call those from our code. We don't have to create the classes in our code because they're already created on the web service engine, but we're simply calling that functionality. So this kind of wraps up this module on web applications. And so, you know, what we've taken a look at here is we've talked about what basic HTML is, how the new standard of HTML5 incorporates HTML and JavaScript and cascading style sheets all as a part of one. And we demonstrated how HTML can be static pages with hyperlinks that send you off to different locations. And then we contrasted that with ASP.NET applications, where there's functionality built in, whether it's client-side or whether it's server-side, but it provides more interactivity for the user rather than just a generic static web page. And then we took a look at how ASP.NET or other web applications are hosted on different servers. And then finally closed out by looking at kind of the differences between a web service and a web application and sort of what the role web services play in today's programming environments. So thanks very much for joining us on this module. And this completes module 4. And if you come back and join us for the next module, we'll take a look at some of the different desktop type of applications you might work on as a developer in your career.